Welcome to Nightlife, a bite-size episode.
Well, many appalling things happen during times of war. The story we're going to tell tonight, though, is sadly one of the most appalling and shocked Australia to its core when it became public in September 1945. Forced to flee Singapore as the Japanese approached down the Malayan Peninsula in February 1942, a number of Australian nurses departed the city on a ship called the Vina Brook, which was bombed by Japanese aircraft as it tried to escape. Some of those who survived the shipwreck ended up in prisoner of war camps on the island of Sumatra, where they became so-called guests of the emperor for the remainder of the war, while another group washed up at a place called Banker Island, where they were told by Japanese soldiers to walk into the sea and then were shot from behind. It was a massacre, pure and simple, and an appalling act of savagery. There was, famously, and you may well have heard this story before, one survivor from the group of 22 nurses, Sister Vivian Bullwinkle, who managed to play dead and then kept quiet about her experiences once she handed herself into the Japanese, fearing that if they knew what she'd witnessed, she too would be killed. Vivian Bullwinkle testified against those Japanese soldiers in war crimes trials. But there's another part to the story of the massacre that's long been suspected, and that's the question of whether these nurses were raped before they were shot. Lynette Silver is a military historian who's been looking for an answer to this question for many years. She now believes she has the proof to say definitely that the nurses were sexually assaulted before being killed. Her research is part of a new book called Angels of Mercy, and Lynette joins us on the program. Lynette, good evening and welcome to Nightlife.
Thank you and good evening.
Yes, you were told many years ago, in fact more than 20 years ago, that many of the nurses who survived in camps and who'd been told about what happened by Vivian Bullwinkle had a secret that they agreed never to talk about on that occasion.
Yes, when I first met them, they were talking quite freely about things in the camp, but they were alluding to this secret throughout this conversation and said quite frankly, there are some things that happened during the war that we have all agreed never to talk about. Mm. So this secret that they had was not a secret in itself. Quite a few people had suspected this secret was there, but no one had ever broken ranks, and no one broke ranks for the whole of their lives. The last one to die, even Vivian Bullwinkle, didn't break ranks.
No, the question of whether the nurses had been sexually assaulted, and we're talking both about the nurses who were killed on Banker Island and the others who were interred on Sumatra. You know, it was an elephant in the room for many years, though, wasn't it? Why was it, do you think?
Well, I think that the reason why they all agreed not to say anything initially was, first of all, if word had got out that Vivian Bullwinkle had survived this massacre, all of them probably would have been killed. The Japanese would have discovered there were witnesses. And back then, I can remember when I was a kid, and back in the 50s, it was very shameful for people to talk about rape. Our parents and mothers and grandmothers referred to it as a fate worse than death. Any girl who managed to be pregnant and unmarried was shoved away to a home where she was kept out of sight. And this whole question of, you know, sex and especially violation was a taboo subject. And I think for this reason, and the shame that was attached to it, even though there shouldn't have been, the nurses decided that the families of the girls who'd been shot, they had enough to cope with without having this secondary level of horror to contend with.
Okay. There'd indeed been an official statement back at the end of the war assuring relatives in Australia that none of the nurses had been molested.
Yes, and that
an official statement. Where did that come from?
That came from the matron who'd been down to rescue them, and she came out to say that what had happened. And then it was really quite a startling statement, said that none of them had been molested in any way, which was a sort of a statement from left field. And I thought it was an extraordinary thing to say, because why would you suspect that they had been unless there were questions being asked?
Just briefly retell the story for those who are listening and are intrigued by this about what actually happened on Banker Island anyway.
Well, Vivian Bullwinkle and other nurses and civilian ladies were washed ashore at a place now called Raji Beach. The civilian ladies went off the next morning while the nurses stayed behind to tend to people who were badly hurt, and there they waited for the Japanese to arrive and therefore to surrender. At that point, the Japanese came down to the beach, separated the men, took them round a little promontory and shot or bayoneted all of them. They then came back to the nurses, and according to Bullwinkle's story, her version, they were then lined up. The ones that had been badly hurt during the bombing of the ship were helped to their feet. They formed a long line and they walked into the sea with the machine gun starting at one end of the line, killing Matron Drummond first, and then moving along. And as Vivian was on the end of the line, she was up to about her waist in water when she was shot. Now, the bullet passed very cleanly through that little fleshy bit above your hip. If you pinch your hip with two fingers, that's pretty much where the bullet went through. She always said that that she had no after effects because the salt water had washed the wound clean, and therefore she had no trouble with it. She floated around, sort of semi-conscious, until the Japanese had gone, then went ashore and found a British soldier who'd been bayoneted, and he was quite sick. He was very ill with injuries he'd had, and she stayed with him, and eventually they got into the prison camp. They found Japanese and surrendered themselves, but he died, meaning he was the only other person she thought that had been a witness to what had been going on. She arrived at the camp. She ran to meet her friends, so obviously she was in no difficulty with this wound, and but she did have her uniform on, which showed the telltale entrance and exit bullet.
Oh, the bullet.
And that's where the story gets interesting, because the bullet hole at the back is where it ought to be. The bullet hole at the front is pretty much in the centre of her stomach, just above the waistline. I didn't realise the implications of this when I saw the uniform down in Canberra. I just wondered how somebody had survived a wound like that with a trajectory which obviously would have gone through the abdomen, until I found one statement by Vivian which said that she'd been shot through the diaphragm, which was a bit different from the first stories that she'd been shot through the hip. I didn't do anything, but another person who was interested in this story, Barbara Angel, she actually examined this uniform and then did tests to see how the bullet hole at the front could possibly line up with the one at the back. And the only way it can happen is if the uniform's undone to the waist and it's trailing back in the water. So she concluded that something had happened and that Vivian, at least, was walking into the water with her uniform off her torso, and that's how she could account for the bullet holes.
Okay. You found something too in the diary of an Australian flight lieutenant called Charles Johnson, which made you want to pursue the matter. What was that?
Yes, that was really interesting. Charles Johnson was captured and sent to Borneo, which is where I first came across him. And as all the things he'd written in his diary about his experiences there were spot on, I was a bit astounded to see that when he came back to Singapore to be demobbed, he got off the hospital ship that had come in from Borneo, and the Australian matron went ashore and came back crying, along with two very concerned senior officers. And according to the matron, she'd seen Australian nurses who were all suffering from VD, and some had children. Well, it seemed to me a very strange thing to be saying. He identified them as Australian, and I wondered whether or not they had indeed been used as comfort women, which is something that had always been denied. But we have, on one hand, one Australian matron saying that this had happened. On the other hand, we have another Australian matron who rescued them saying that they weren't molested. So we haven't actually got very far with that. And it's just a big question which is still hanging. But the thing that really intrigued me was, were the nurses on Banker Island that were shot actually raped before they were marched into the water?
I'm talking with Lynette Silver, military historian, about the massacre on Banker Island, which involving Vivian Bullwinkle, a story that's been told often, horrendous, horrendous series of events, and the issue of whether the story's been fully told, indeed. There's another piece of evidence which was something that Vivian Bullwinkle herself told journalist Tess Lawrence before she died. What was that?
Yes, I found that was quite hard to find, hidden away in a really remote website on the internet, and it revealed that Tess Lawrence had interviewed Vivian before she died, and Vivian came out with a story which confirmed what everybody that was interested in this had suspected. Yes, all of us had been violated by the Japanese.
She said this?
She said this. Told Tess Lawrence this, absolutely. And then she went on to say, but what really irked her and distressed her and had given her sleepless nights was the fact that the Australian government had ordered her to not mention this in her statements to the tribunal held in Tokyo after the war. She wanted to come out and tell the tribunal exactly what was happening, but she was ordered not to. And as it was an order, she was not allowed to disclose it, which means that since 1945-46, the Australian authorities have been covering up this story, a story which Vivian Bullwinkle wanted to tell before she died. Now, she didn't. I don't know why. Perhaps she got too sick and didn't get around to it. But the only record of that interview is in Tess Lawrence's account. And as she's a media ethicist, I think that we can pretty much take her word for gospel that this conversation did take place. I've got no reason whatsoever to doubt it.
There were some, perhaps not contemporaneous, but later witnesses too, weren't there? You note that there were a couple of other people who'd been on Radji Beach shortly after the massacre, and they'd seen the nurses' bodies, and the bodies were in various states of undress.
Yes, there were some men who had, one was floating out to sea. He was coming in from where he'd been shipwrecked. He heard the screams and the shots. Another two had survived the massacre. One had dived under the water and got away. Another one was fortunately just lucky he wasn't hit. And they'd come back to the beach and they had seen the nurses there, states of undress, some naked, and gave quite graphic descriptions about the way they'd been killed and, you know, swords had been used, and it sounded like it was pretty much a massacre, actually. With those that were too ill to get up and walk into the sea, you know, bayoneted on the beach on the little stretchers. So there was secondary information, but the thing is that all this information's been around there. There's been quite a lot of it. But nobody's sat down with the jigsaw pieces and put them together. And my personal contribution came in the form of a diary that was kept by the wife of the senior investigator, Major Williams, in Tokyo. And she wrote about her experiences in Japan with her husband and said that there were two war crimes her husband had investigated which were very disturbing. The first one was just a very, very brief account of the nurses being marched into the sea and machine gunned. Then she went on with the most lurid, terrible account of five airmen who'd been captured, had been strapped to mess tables alive, had been vivisectioned by the Japanese who'd removed the hearts and livers. Three of them, the livers were used to feed the Japanese. The other two were dried and sent back to Japan for special medicine. Now, following this up, Major Williams had gone to the home of the doctor who'd dried the livers and recovered the human liver with grate marks from where the mother had been obviously using it for some reason, I don't know, to eat or make medicine. Now, that doctor was hanged, and Mrs. Williams obviously was very disturbed by this. Well, I read this. This is probably the worst war crime I've ever read in all my 20 years of reading war crimes. This is pretty gross. And I thought, why she included the nurses being marched into the sea and being machine gunned with a crime that's supposed to equate to this appalling piece of cannibalism. And I went back and looked at the type page and realised that the account of the nurses, which I just skimmed through, finished mid-sentence at the bottom of one page, and the top of the next page had been crudely hacked off with a pair of scissors, removing the rest of her statement. So the big question then in my mind was, what is it that Mrs. Williams wrote down that somebody doesn't want us to see?
So look, they were sexually assaulted before they were shot. That much seems evident. But why do you think, was there anything more sinister, do you think, than other than the mores of the time, which have led to this cover up?
No,
was there just a simple desire to protect the survivors' memories as much as possible, or what?
Yes, I think so, and it still happens today. I mean, back before Australian Archives started digitising documents, a long time ago, I read a terrible accounts of things that had happened to captured soldiers up in New Guinea, where, for instance, the Japanese had caught this fellow and wanted to see how long his heart would beat after they cut it out of him while he was still alive. I mean, really terrible things. Now, if you go now and look at that sort of thing, all this stuff's now been expunged. And we are still acting as censors in that way on these war crimes trials 70 years after the event. So I think purely it was one of horror. I mean, nurses are such gentle creatures. They're angels of mercy. Mm. They have usually have lovely personalities. They're usually very lovely human beings. And to Australians to accept that they were just marched into the sea and machine gun was bad enough.
But more acceptable than
that. That more acceptable than saying, and before that happened,
they were subject to gruesome sexual assault.
Yes.
Yeah, I get that. We did a story a while back about the war crimes and the lack of appetite for them after a while, after the war ended. Were any of the soldiers who machine gunned that group of nurses ever held to account?
No, because all of them, especially the one that was in charge, these soldiers were all from the same unit that had raped and murdered the nurses in Hong Kong.
Right.
And they moved from Hong Kong to Bangor Island. And that's why the questions have been asked, you know, if they did it once, would they do it again? Well, they'd been killed in battle. There was one who was witness to it. He had malaria and was quite sick at the time and was lying down in the jungle quite ill. And he heard a lot of screaming going on and asked his senior officer what was going on. He said, oh, the officers are pleasuring themselves with some women and it'd be the turn of the rank and file next. And that's the only person associated with that, but he said he wasn't part of it. And because there was insufficient evidence to get anybody, this whole investigation they were doing didn't go to trial. And because it didn't go to trial, File 152, which held all the evidence that we would be very interested in seeing today, was culled. And therefore, any questions asked of Vivian Bullwinkle or anybody else have now been lost because the contents of the investigation file itself have been destroyed.
Terrible. Lynette, it's been fascinating to talk. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.